more kind of, it feels like any framework that I have, it's kind of harder to let go of, I guess. I don't know. Something about frameworks.
Yeah.
And knowing that they're kind of fiction, but still grasping. If this doesn't leave you with less, then life will leave you with less. And I think it's got me in its sights. There's something about just holding the whole thing without such grasping, like letting it have what it already has. Not even letting it is anything that really makes any difference, because it does anyway. I'm not the one running the show. I guess it's given up the facade that I am the one running the show. Like, in a bigger way, setting that down.
Yeah.
That statement is proof that I still think I'm running the show, though.
Yep.
I can set it down in a bigger way. I'm outing myself.
Well, the magical power of individuation is subtle and intoxicating. And the adoption of frameworks or frames of reference and the creation of context in which experience occurs, or context as experience occurs, is, you know, ongoing.
And kind of fiction.
And it's of the nature of fiction. Mm-hmm. But we're very endeared to this fiction. For, you know, you could say many or most people, this fiction is what it's all about. Winning in the fiction.
Oh, yeah. Or even just appearing to win, even if you're stuck in the wind.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Where I work, the name of the game is, you know, make it look like, you know, make sure that everybody knows that you're working on something important and make a big shit out of whatever you're doing, even though it's maybe not. And it's a crap place to work. It's just people trying to be bigger people all the time, mostly for money and power and safety.
Sure. Well, that's the workplace. Yeah. Once you're made a fantasy, uh, we're likely to invest a lot of time and energy in justifying it. The urgent goal of everyone, regardless of the endeavor, the urgent goal is for the continuity of this fiction in a winning manner. So if I can get secret teachings, well, that gives me an advantage. If I can practice longevity, that gives me an advantage. If I can, you know, become expert at some kind of healing modality, that gives me advantage. Perhaps, you know, celebrity, means of making a living, being a helpmate to other humans in a constructive manner.
Seemingly constructive.
Seemingly constructive manner. So this, you know, the accoutrements of this fantasy, of this fiction of self, has a grasping and acquisitive component or nature, has a self-promoting component. Blustery. Right? Blustery self-confidence. Built, or, you know, as a lei, right? A Hawaiian lei. Beautiful flowers adorning a fiction, an absolute fiction. Relatively few people are interested in the revelation of the fiction and or skillful means to undermine the fiction. Most are interested in, desirous of whatever ultimate kind of experience they think they're after. Whether it's, you know, jumping from a helicopter on a high snowy peak, or winning at OTB.
It's OTB.
Off-track betting.
Oh.
Or becoming an acknowledged sponsor and occasional speaker at your local 12-step meeting with a 20-year chip. No matter what we get engaged in, with whom we're going to be, you know, motivated, let's say, by some form of mastery, acknowledgement. That legitimizes us, justifies our existence. If we're altruistic, then we might think we want to be of service to others. If we're criminally inclined, then it's kind of the opposite of that.
Yeah.
We want, you know, to fool as many people as possible and get away with whatever we can.
But at the root of it is always serving yourself.
Well, yeah, the fiction. The fiction loves itself. It's you could say, well designed to convince anyone and anything of its meritorious and deserving nature. Which includes spiritual practices. Doing a beautiful, you know, yoga routine out on the raft in the middle of the lake so that everyone from the beach can see you.
Oh, you guys. That'd be nice.
Yeah, I mean, there's beauty in all this.
Everyone goes think that right now. Oh, guys. You know. You're messing with the view behind the rift, like the flat, you know, trees and stuff.
Well, sure, the fiction is always messing with the view.
That's a good point.
That's why I get the big bucks.
What if you all of a sudden became like one of these superhero popular, what you call guys? You'd throw us to the wolves.
I wouldn't lose sleep over that one.
As long as we're living in fiction.
He is a superhero popular.
This isn't going anywhere.
Well, I was listening to a little bit of the that one Nyam, is that the
normal?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And you know, I think with each different person, like you listen to somebody a lot, it's like every other word, like all of a sudden a different language appears or something that I'm saying, and, oh, you
yes.
Know, you hear it in a different way or whatever. I don't know what, I can't repeat what she was saying because I don't remember, but the gist of it was, this, everything you're saying, but also fiction. Yeah. What else was she something? So I kind of have it here. Do you know what I'm saying? Like on some level, so to speak, I understand. Like I get what everybody's saying.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? And like I can't repeat necessarily, but she. You know, it's like all story and whatever. Her quintessential way, I guess. Now I'm using a big word. Of anyway, it was speaking to me. I felt it, like on a level that I could understand. And you too. It's not just her or whatever. So can you speak to that? Like, oh, you can kind of feel.
Well, the
truth or something?
The nature of what we refer to as experiencing is felt. All is felt. That's the primacy. Mm. So at one level, there's the art of refutation, meaning you can, you know, weave a clever or entertaining yarn about the nature of the fiction of human mind, human behavior, human presumption. That's the refutation side. And that's a lot of fun. I mean, Paul Hederman does a very nice job at, you know, hilarious refutation.
Right.
Yeah. And that part of the equation is useful as a harnessing or attracting force to cohere awareness. It's nice to hear a thing and have a sense of agreement. To hear a thing and go, you know, yeah, you know, to see the the nature of fiction in your own experience and the frustration that accompanies that fiction. Then you can like, whoa, that's me. I'm aligned. And in doing that, you know, we do that with each other when we agree on what movie to go to, or, you know, whether to go to this pizza place or, you know, Chick-fil-A. That's cohering, right? Attention, cohering awareness, creating a field of agreement. And a field of agreement can, as it matures, is undefended. Right? And so we do this very casually. We even do this with ourselves. When I decide to take this to the office for lunch instead of this to the office for lunch, and it feels right. Or you have to make a business decision or deal with, you know, a difficult child or your difficult experience with a child, which makes the child difficult. So that side of the equation is a way of engendering coherence in awareness, which you could say is a sense of agreement. That you can find what it is that's being spoken about in your own experience, and you, aha.
You sniff out what feels true, what feels valid to you.
Yes. So
you've
that's...
You've got a good sniffer.
That's the...
Not necessarily, but yet, maybe in the realm of the end.
Yeah. So that's one aspect of... let's just say a conversational approach to, you know, realization, to subtlety. Mm-hmm. And what's the next thing that happens? As a field of coherent awareness and, let's say, agreement or availability opens in you, that's felt. It works when it's felt, not just an intellectual agreement, but, you know, you're journeying now.
Well, there's a vulnerability in that. To be that open means when you get to work and it feels like crap, you cry. You feel it.
Yeah, or, that's right. You know, yeah.
You feel more than if you're just doing it with your head.
Yeah. And you know, we can say give yourself permission to feel things in a different way, in with availability, with undefendedness.
Yeah, less protected.
Yeah.
Well, that's the that protection, going through life utterly, completely protected is part of what makes us feel like we're not alive.
Yes.
You know, it's like feeling fully awake and alive and things aren't as vivid, it's because we're all just not willing to feel.
It's the fiction has, you know, stolen everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. The grocery shelves are bare because the fiction walked out with everything.
To really get a sense of what's going on here and to open to something broader, you open up to all kinds of crap.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're discovering how, not only how to, but how it feels to inhabit your present experience in a different way.
And when you're with certain people that tend to kind of trigger that, a lot of human shit comes up. Like when you're with somebody like Jeannie, like a lot of human shit is coming up in the people around her because I think they're taking off some of the wraps that, like some of the protective layers.
That's right. Yes, you become unwrapped.
Mm-hmm. And if you have, like, nasty shifts from your past you haven't looked at, it's probably going to come up.
Well, sure.
But where the line is on just wading through the nasty shit from your past ad nauseum and just like getting over it, and we're here to look at what this is, not sort through human stuff. It's a weird line.
Yep. Yes, it is. Especially since our conditioned proclivity is to jump into content and jump into identification at, you know, every opportunity. Mm-hmm. So that then you could say, if we had a second phase to this discovery process, after you have, let's say, solicited coherent awareness, a felt sense of agreement, a felt sense of vulnerability and availability, right? Then you move into this, you know, next dimension.
That's strange, because, you know, in the context of she was talking about with Jeannie,
mm-hmm.
I started to go into my felt sense, and I said, okay, what's this whole, you know, back leg sciatica thing, whatever's going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
And what I got was that, or the sense I had was that it's not so much, and this hasn't been true in the past, it's not so much right now what's going on as far as like shutting down to some emotion from my past. It's an actually shutting down. Like, in other words, I went into go, 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 stress, move. You know, I'm moving, have to put this house for sale. Da, 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 da.
Yes.
I shut down.
Uh-huh.
To what? I shut down to my felt sense.
Yes.
Right? And I shut down to my openness, however much I've achieved that, which, you know, maybe this much, but.
Yeah.
A small amount, but nevertheless, I shut down to that, whatever that is for me.
Uh-huh.
And in doing so, my body has taken a toll.
Well, yes. The fiction tends to somaticize.
The fiction tends to somaticize. Oh, yeah, and then so then I got a story about this and that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, maybe fiction, but when it shows up in your body, it feels pretty damn real.
Well, yep. So when it
at moments it can disappear, but it comes back. But anyway,
sure, yeah.
It's like if I'm shutting down to what I'm actually, my felt sense, what I'm actually feeling, and I'm just in action Lisa mode, you know,
mm-hmm.
hero Lisa uh-huh. mode, then I'm gonna. In a sense,
well, you know, it's a.
It's going to take a toll on.
It's a stress routine. It's a stress process. The physical stress and the environmental stress and the stress of imagination and the stress of apprehension, the stress of failure. Yeah, all of these scenarios that we play out, right, leave a certain residue behind, which is, in many cases, somaticized.
Good thing there's lots of healers in this dream world.
And that's why you could say there are lots of healers in this dream world, because we hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And the healers, whether allopathic or otherwise, relieve the pain.
Or at least they give you some illusion that you're going to get relief.
Sure.
And who's not going to try it if you're uncomfortable?
Yeah, and we move from, you know, one imaginative healer to the next.
Yeah.
You know, there's not too many Traeger practitioners around anymore. You know, now it's access bars yeah. and pineal activation.
There's not too many what around anymore?
See?
I've heard of Traeger. That's a pretty much a classic.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Traeger? You've never heard of Traeger?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Traeger.
I have no idea what it is, but I've heard of it.
Feldenkrais? Alexander technique?
Yeah, yeah, that's big stuff.
Yeah. Was.
It isn't anymore?
I don't think so.
It's kind of like books. You know, if it's not, if it doesn't have a copyright within the last couple of years, it has been so wasteful. Either that or just so prolific. It's the same thing in the tech world. Everything has to have a new name, a new approach. The old is just never good enough.
Uh-huh. The racism and the sexism stays the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The green. That's pretty constant.
So you learn how to learn how it feels to reconsider the presence of presence.
And felt sense is a really good way to do that.
And felt sense, which is the primacy of experience.
Even like transitions in experience are kind of fun to pay more attention to. Waking from sleep, or even like, I find like stepping outside, like from here when we're done, like that kind of a transition, it's really interesting to notice how different it is.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Right. Daydream is a way of distancing ourselves from intimacy, which is the intimacy of sensation or the intimacy of felt sense.
And by daydream, you mean label everything, know what it is. Oh, I know what this is. This is just night sky on a Thursday night with Jeff talking in the kids' room.
To live in imagination.
Yep.
Right. Hi. To live in imagination is a way of distancing ourselves from the provocative and vitality of true intimacy. Which some people might mistake as emotional or sentimental intimacy, but that's not what's being referred to.
We're back to the vulnerability of really being fully open to that kind of intimacy.
Oh, yes.
What that requires. It means, when it hurts, usually, for me at least, it means I cry. I'm not accustomed
to that. That's a gift. You know, not everyone has that.
Never used to.
See, they hurt, and then we hurt, and we suppress, we repress, we antagonize, we blame, we act out, you know.
Yeah.
To hurt and hurt and to cry is a a beautiful expression of emotional intelligence. So we are, with no effort at all, overwhelmed from moment to moment with, you could say, far too much. And we either, you could say, add to that crescendo through the daydreaming process, or you could say we suppress the intensity of that crescendo through daydreaming. Because daydreaming creates a tunnel of attention. A narrow bandwidth of attention.
Well, it brings it into more of a, quote, safe space. You're like making a box for yourself. It's adding your own framework.
Yes.
Give me a framework, please. So I'm not just...
Yeah.
Wide open, no clue as to navigate this.
Uh-huh. That's what you could say, you know, how daydreaming operates or what the apparent consequences are of daydreaming.
Can't stand your job anymore? Fire up some spreadsheets, man. Get some framework.
Oh, yeah.
Make sure that, you know, what you're going to do looks like it makes sense.
Right. Yeah, so you could say the principal relationship we have with the miracle of being is an individuated engagement, individuated perspective that has to do with I, me, my past, and my future. I'm not that concerned about my present because I'm too busy daydreaming about my future.
And we're back to how unsatisfactory that is.
Yes, and it's
starving.
And it's essential when it occurs that we have a face-to-face with just how unsatisfactory it is. Otherwise, the motive to seek a more refined relationship with living won't trigger, won't launch.
I think we were talking about this on Tuesday. Like, some people, they don't have that unsatisfactory thing. They just kind of take it at face value. This is what you get, and they're not, like, on fire for something.
I've envied them for a lifetime.
I don't know how they do it, poor son of a bitches.
Be a normal person.
Well, I would give, you know, the pinky that I left when I wanted something else. I'm out of pinkies.
Yeah, this group is not for normal people. That's why it's so small. These endeavors are not necessarily for normal people.
No, you have to come to a certain
inspiration.
Well, desperation or exhaustion or conscious dukkha, conscious unsatisfactoriness. And to further appreciate that the unsatisfactoriness is not being caused by anyone or anything else.
That's growing up. Like, there's a big piece of growing up when you stop blaming all your complaints and unsatisfactoriness on somebody else. I tend to be an expert at that.
Well, you can see it at your local 12-step group. Who's capable of taking responsibility for their own crap mind, and who's still blaming anything other than themselves for their despair, for their dukkha?
Theoretically, that you would think that over time that would be more and more.
Let's hope so. That's what the 12 steps are there to assist the addict with, is a liberating self-responsibility.
I read some study that, like, the actual success rate of AA was, like, really bad, like, single-digit percent-wise.
Could be.
It's just not at all advertised or ever presented in that way, and that leaves people thinking, like, oh, like, I just didn't, you know, work the program right, or it didn't work for me because I, you know, messed something up, this or that.
Well, it's a subculture, right, amongst those of us who enjoy alcoholism and drugs and every other indulgence to medicate our own despair. Those of us that show up at a meeting is a subculture. It's already a small percent.
Yeah.
Right? Of people that are somehow attracted to hang out and practice what it means to be real and available and make the coffee and set up the chairs and grow the fuck up and be of service instead of wailing on everyone about how shitty they are. Yeah, so it's a subculture to begin with, and so its success rate, you know, right.
Well, converse to that is, you know, there's a lot of people out there that are creating a lot of crazy situations due to their drinking and drugs.
Oh, you mean like the Senate and the House?
For example.
I think you could take out the drugs and drink and it wouldn't really change that much.
You might not. It might not, because those are just pleasurable accoutrements of an insane species.
Yeah. I wonder what would happen if you sobered up the House and said, like, they could no longer be in politics if they were getting high in any way.
They might do a worse job. I mean,
they'd all
a
start more getting fat.
Tension, concentration.
They just switch up addictions. They find something else. There's always something else. We as a species are really good at always something else.
Yeah, when you, let's say take a very exhausting inventory of what humans are capable of doing, eating and drinking and whatever, you know, it's staggering, it's overwhelming what we're capable of in terms of imbibing and behaving and acting out and denial and chaos.
We really suck.
Well, we're imbued. We're empowered as masters of chaos.
We're arrogant. We're the top of the food chain, man.
Yeah. So, and we abuse the privilege of a neocortex and an opposable thumb everywhere we turn.
Good to be king.
That's right. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I had read something that, like, you know, we went from, like, a middle food chain species to the top of the food chain in such a rapid time period. It wasn't like through the normal millions of years.
Real scary.
So that's why the collective, you know, sort of mind and society we have is like an unsecure, unstable position. And the context to use was like, I would rather give nuclear weapons to a wolf with sufficient brain capacity than like, you know, a mid-level monkey that out of nowhere has suddenly overrun the whole globe and mm-hmm. nobody's secure enough to act like adults,
like,
basically.
We know.
Yeah, that's right. Right. You could say our technological capacities and prowess occurred way too fast.
Yeah.
So that the maturing aspect of consciousness as human is, you know, struggling to catch up. Yeah.
Yeah, I really felt like I was just like a monkey recently.
Well done. Uh-huh.
Banshee, yeah.
Banshee.
Screaming banshee.
There's an owl.
It's some kind of mammal, right?
I think it's an owl.
An owl?
I think that's an owl, but I'm not sure, because it comes at night.
So the one that we're hearing.
Inside of this one, right here.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, so people might be more interested in attending a mega church run by a soft-spoken soother like Joel Osteen and tithe their way to happiness than to, let's say, sit in a conversation like this one. Because that urgency to win in life, which includes a winning relationship with God, an abundant relationship with God, is more attractive.
And it's strange, too, to, like, take responsibility for your own life instead of trying to, like, put it on somebody or buy your way. But then at the same time, it's, like, brings you to a space where it's, like, oh, like, actually all responsibility is just, like, man, it's, like, a weird... Sort of.
I think everything turns out to be amorphously dissatisfying. You look at anything with care. Look at anything with care, and you'll find just a plasma of unsatisfactoriness.
Yeah, no, I have been. Maybe that's not what I was specifically referring to, but I just mean like the idea of like personal responsibility. It's like, oh, this is like sort of driving you in this direction. But in the end, it's just like, that's just like another thing that just be like swept aside in the end. Not that there's,
yes,
you know, anything specifically dissatisfying about personal responsibility or just like another concept. Like,
but I think you're more apt to actually see that if you stop trying to put it on somebody else. If you stop trying to put it on somebody else and you just own that, all right, this is up to me.
I guess,
and then it gets really weird because it's like, oh, fuck, I can't even do it. Like,
you examine your own.
Yeah.
Sense of personal responsibility.
Yep.
any movement of curiosity and assessment, anthropologically driven, sociologically driven, spiritually driven, financially driven, are going to all end up at the same completely swept away mm-hmm. observation. It's all swept away. Which turns out to be this.
There seems to be something about sort of facing down the fear, though. Like if you're of the ilk that you know put your stuff on other people all the time, you start to take that back. I don't know. There's some clarity that seems to come from not playing those kind of bullshit games with other primates.
Well, let's say you have to apply yourself so that you can enjoy the rug before it's swept out from underneath you.
Yeah.
Then you apply yourself to the next layer of ruse and fiction. Then you apply yourself to the next layer of ruse and fiction. And you apply yourself again. And someone keeps stealing the rugs. One is left with the curious plasma of present experience without context, without justification, without any matrix whatsoever that places you, the world, or experience itself in some context. That's the transhuman side of it. Because it's no longer about behavior, morality, even maturing, which is, you know, can be lovely for those few that benefit from it. And, you know, as social creatures that rely on manifold language, you know, to communicate and share and build, you know, systems, we continue, of course, to participate in and hopefully thrive, right, in the fiction.
The plan.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. You want to thrive in the fiction.
Grab as much as you can.
Yeah.
Safety, fun.
And so you could say the question is how are you oriented to thrive? Do we thrive in the fiction through the accumulation of knowledge, experience, perhaps wealth, power, celebrity, you right? Or can we thrive in the fiction through the road less traveled, which is, you know, transcendence yoga?
This is thriving in the fiction, trying to see through the fiction.
Yeah, which is a lot of fun.
It's fun in this group.
What did you say? I didn't catch that last.
You know, considering the fiction of your experience and what you can learn or glean from that observation is a fun. It's entertaining. It has its little, you know, moments of revelation or of, you know, frustration and despair, but that's fun too.
You can find where in your deepest despair and all the angst, it's like you can find where there's something really alert and tuned in and alive in that whole thing.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I love the show. It really does.
This is a, you know, it's a refinement journey. But it's not necessarily about how to place a dinner serving at Buckingham Palace, which is another form of a refinement journey.
Apparently some of my relatives might have done that, actually.
Sure.
Palaces.
Yeah.
Served.
Yeah.
Served or were served?
I think I would have liked to have been served. But I'm thinking
it's good to know yourself.
They were the servers. It was funny because today these girls were, I was like a hairdresser, and these girls were like helping me because I was like, you know, hurt my leg, you know, so they're like dressing me and putting things on. Like things on me and stuff, you know. Where I think, yeah, because you've seen those shows about different queens and whatnot being dressed when they were like, oh, that would be very annoying, you know. But there's something kind of like being served.
Being pampered at every square inch. Oh, yeah.
Winning.
Winning.
Krishnamurti.
But I don't need to be popular about it. I just need to be
served. I just need to taken care of. Krishnamurti would sometimes, maybe often, you know, refer to order and disorder. Disorder was a distracted mind. You know, a content seduced mind. And order was the opposite of that. Yeah. Order is content-free receptivity. But there's always this, you know, fun, if not maddening, aspect to it. We're habituated to experience in the way that we experience, sensorially and otherwise. So if we're interested, let's say, in something as silly as self-realization, then we're orienting to that. Again, in the same way that we're oriented to my body, to my mind, to my feelings, to my stuff, to my suffering. We're oriented the same way.
What the self-realization thing to me is all about, like, minimizing suffering, which is mostly self-imposed.
Okay, and which is, you know, that in and of itself is a lovely adventure.
And sometimes I feel like I'm on a merry-go-round. Oh, you know what? I have heard this thing.
You are.
It's okay if it's a good day. Good merry-go-round. Yeah, sometimes you're flung off.
So before you, you know, enter into another presentation, notice the sense, right? Return to what's being referred to as felt sense. And just notice the textures of experience without focusing on any particular object. Just the texture of experience itself. yourself as a field of sensitivity. That's where the, you could say the transmission or the maturation occurs, is you actually become more intimately fond of yourself as a field of sensitivity. And that field of sensitivity now becomes enjoyable to you. More enjoyable than a story told about what is imagined to have occurred or is imagined that is occurring now in that field of sensitivity. Your attention is on the field itself, not on what is vying for your attention as an object. That, you could say, foundational yoga is done with dhyan, meditation, or done with asana, right? Is done with the yamas and the niyamas, right? The purification preparatory rituals. The karma yoga, the bhakti yoga, the jnana yoga. All of these are aimed at the same fundamental discovery, which is the field. Resting in the field.
Which you don't have to do anything special to do, because we're resting in all the time.
Yes, it's more of a fasting than it is a what to do about.
Let the other horseshit just do what it does and come back to. Oh,
and this to be here. And this fasting is lethal, and you could say that's why we avoid it with such. With such emphasis, with such force. We avoid it with such force because it's lethal. Resting in the field will bring you face to face with, let's just say, curious textures.
Well, that's why we like tend to go for addictions. Busyness is a monster addiction.
Uh-huh.
My favorite.
Mm-hmm.
Don't leave me alone with this. Keep moving and doing it.
In the Kashmiri tradition and elsewhere, of course, resting in attention, resting in the field, starves the neocortex of singing its next song, of convincing you of something that needs to be dealt with by you. That's the movement of daydream. That's the movement of fiction. Same in the Dzogchen. You know, the revelation or the emphasis on Rigpa as basic space is an emphasis or an invitation to sense the field, the texture of experiencing itself not negotiating with what appears in it. So the field of attention itself turns out to be quite luscious, quite fascinating, quite nourishing, liberating, I might add. You can say you begin to sense yourself as a more diffuse harmonic rather than as a, you know, a suffering or clamoring individual. The suffering and clamoring individual is, you know, made up of the imagination of content and the implications of that content. But the revelation of Rigpa as basic space, or the field of experiencing itself, is not so disturbed. It doesn't suffer space or time or implication. It's not clamoring for entertainment or context. And that's not so far, really. It's kind of this. So there's no real there's no real membrane or separation between this and this. A membrane or separation is illusorily, hypnotically created when attention finds objects and then wanders into daydream and implication. What will happen to me is a function of daydream. What do I do about this or that is a function of daydream. How much longer do I have to go to these fucking meetings or wherever it is I go until I get enlightened is a function of daydreaming. The myth of self, the myth of individuation. And so, of course, all of my somatic experience and sentimental experience is likewise a function of daydream. It doesn't suggest that pain isn't real or that anything is real or unreal at all. You needn't make really an emphasis about what's real or unreal. Because this is a, you know, an inclusive absolute. So it's all real or it's all unreal. You're not going to find a real over here that's the better part of an unreal. It's either all real or it's all unreal, in which case, what the difference does it make? It's like, is there free will or not free will? Well, it's pure free will or it's pure not free will. You're just done with, right, what might appear to be enticing demarcations, philosophical demarcations of what this is or isn't. Because that can only occur as and in daydream. We're faced with a phantasm of proliferation as phenomena, as experience, as the five senses, as felt sense, as the fiction of self. And it's a, you know, kind of a rare yogi or yogini that is happy to see through that. That's willing to discard the imagination of one's life to find out what this might actually be. As long as we're in pursuit of experience, secular or spiritual or what have you, then that becomes an acquisitive relationship with being, a hungry, ghost-like, acquisitive relationship with being, which blows when it occurs to you that it blows. Before then, it blows not. That's a good t-shirt. This blows not. This blows. This blows not.
This blows not.
I suck. I suck not. And it's not that difficult to go through, you know, a couple million iterations in a day of this sucks, this sucks not.
Yeah.
Wash on, wash off.
I'm just thinking about that Tai Chi.
Wax on, wax off.
You can't pin it down.
No, it's absurd. It's an absurd plasma that's nothing at all. So the pinning it down turns out to pin you down.
Well, usually pinning it down is driven by an agenda of I want this, I want it my way. Usually by a control agenda. And that's no way to navigate this crazy place. That doesn't work very well. You might as well just surrender.
Might as well.
No brakes on the motorcycle.
Except that.
Fuck that. Fight to the end.
I've tried
Which
that.
Is another fun adventure.
I was fighting till the end.
Refuse your own liberation to the end.
Well, you can always stall. I'm the master at stalling.
You can always stall.
That is the name of the game. Seek and never find. Like, we like to pretend that actually looking for it, but we don't really want it. Why this doesn't work so well.
Well, you know, we can't help to approach this in the way that we approach this, because we're under the influence of fractal distraction.
I thought it was Weird Uncle Ernie.
Or Weird Uncle Ernie, which can exaggerate fractal distraction. That's right. I mean, this is begging for you to make something of it nonstop. It's begging you, on its knees, begging you to make this about something.
It's the name of the game. It's what we do here. We make it about all kinds of things. It doesn't really work, but we try.
Well, see, any picture that appears to you right? Any subtitle that you bring to your present experience suggests that it's succeeded in convincing you that something's going on here. Because now you have a subtitle.
Our excellent adventure.
Yeah, Bill and Ted's most excellent adventure.
It's funny, like last time I was here with you, not here, but everything, like, I don't know, just like stops for a moment and I just like, you know, start laughing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, moments, all the machinery's just like, oh, why are you laughing? Like, what's going on here? Is this some sort of awakening? Ah, like, you're supposed to be laughing, like, ah, like, look how much of an idiot you are now. I'm like laughing at that, and it's just like, the slightest little thing is just like, oh, whoa, what's going on?
Yep.
See?
Yeah. Yep. I mean, it's kind of a magical discovery, though it's a little unnerving. Yeah. See, that's, I mean, look at the fervor with which this is trying to convince itself that something has been found and to create a context, place it in context.
Doesn't want you to find something without being along for the ride.
Yeah, in a sense, you could say, you know, consciousness is just insists on riding shotgun
like the pain
for your
ass,
whole life.
Pain in the ass little stalker that just won't let you go.
Uh-huh.
Shut yeah. up.
Right. Are you going, can I come?
Yeah.
Are you going to pee? Can I come?
Nope.
Yeah, do you have some pain in your hip? Can I come? Mm-hmm. You see, it's like being accompanied by you know, call it a superego or a companion all the time. Your experience is being is accompanied by a companion all the time.
A rating, judging, complaining.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Rah rah.
Yeah.
Ta-da!
Uh-huh.
Just never stop.
No, and it's kind of a miracle, you know, it's like to think that you can find a cave. To get out from under the miraculous insistence of consciousness, always coming along for the ride. No such cave exists.
God damn it. It's really trying, I mean... This,
well, but, except by the shores of the Delaware River next to the marina. That's where it exists.
That's the kind of cave.
On the ocean.
Wherever there's negative ions, so shall I be.
But okay, so I feel like this thing is out to get me, and it's saying,
it is.
"All right, bitch, you think you're gonna let me go? Like you're just gonna go off into your little la la land or whatever."
Uh-huh.
You know?
They won't let you.
Forget about it. I'm going to get your attention.
Yes, that's right. I will. I'll get your attention.
You're
yeah.
Distracted by physical feeling.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God. I just want to shoot my ego or whatever it is.
Well,
it'd
be a wasted bullet, but
it
give it a whirl.
It loves it. It's attention.
Yeah. Mm.
Bring it on.
So it does, you know, let's say, you could say it requires, but not really. From the point of view of, let's say, practicing or giving your attention to the nature of experience, you can say it requires a certain kind of maturing vigilance to see, right, the insistent nature of consciousness riding shotgun.
It's fun to see the insane nature of consciousness riding shotgun. When you catch it in all these just ridiculous inconsistencies, like it'll claim that it makes sense and it's got your answers, start to sort of unravel it and pick it apart, and it is insane.
That's right. Yeah, well, it's like trying to argue with a psychic that knows what's coming next before you do.
Yeah.
So it's always going to outsmart you.
Yeah, you can't win.
No. Which is nice. That's when you deflate.
But then you get physical pain.
All kinds of things, of course, occur. You know.
Bad genes, physical pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crazy people doing crazy things right in front of you that you can't avoid dealing with.
Welcome to the jungle. Yeah.
Little dogs that require attention.
Yeah. You know, or that the money in the bank is still worth something. That it can be relied upon to assist you with a comfortable retirement.
For the next 50 years.
That is an illusion, really big, because, I mean, the whole stock market thing.
The whole thing is a fiction.
I know.
The value of the dollar.
It's easy to see with that.
Yeah, yeah.
So.
Yeah. That's why, you know, pundits and salespersons like Ron Paul warn about, and have been doing so for decades, warn about imminent, you know, financial collapse and a run on the banks and da 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 da, while they're making money because you're subscribing to their newsletters while they're telling you about, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. So, everyone's in the shekel business.
A shekel. What's a shekel?
Coinage.
Yes.
Currency. Uh-huh.
Everybody except me. And I'm the one that appears to be.
Yeah.
The tenants run the show in my place.
That's right.
The asylum has been officially taken.
Uh-huh. Something other than yourself is revealing the tapestry of unsatisfactoriness and revealing the nature of the fiction of consciousness. This apprehension is occurring quite of its own accord. We're not in charge of the poignancy of unsatisfactoriness, nor the road to remedy it, nor the revelations that appear as your attention matures.
Just admit you're not in charge of anything.
Not in charge of anything.
But it really appears that, like, I make the choice to do certain things.
Mm-hmm.
So secure.
The impulse is present. And you could say the acquiescing to that impulse, or the recognition of the impulse that strikes you as a yes, occurs. But then, you know, shotgun consciousness, you know, riding shotgun, insists that you decided.
You know what's interesting, that yes or a no, it comes from beliefs and thoughts and inclinations, but who says that we have any control over that?
Everywhere you look in the tapestry of your own consciousness, you'll find copious evidence of having no control.
Yeah.
But the average person on the street will refuse and refute that vehemently, if not violently.
Yeah.
Yeah. I almost got punched out at, fellowship after a 12-step meeting when I took the liberty to, bring that point up. In a casual conversation, and one addict went ballistic.
They want to think they have control. They want to think they've found the answer.
Yeah. Well, it's, to a certain quality of mind or being, it's intimidating and frightening and disorienting to confront the suggestion that there is no control.
Yeah, Sam Harris said he got a number of like death threats and other deranged sort of letters.
Well, he would, yeah.
Well, in response, all the religious stuff, yeah, but in response to his book specifically, Free Will, people like writing letters to him, like,
yeah,
taking over my mind, like, you're controlling my mind, get out of my head or I'll kill you. Like,
yes.
Wow.
Yeah. I feel like that's a good book right there.
Wow.
That's,
yeah. Yeah, Sam Harris is he's a dangerous fellow. Yeah. Well, he's coming at it as a philosopher, right? An author, researcher, philosopher. Yeah. Who has? I mean, he's a medical doctor. He has PhDs and. Neuroscientist. So
yeah,
he's PhD. He's PhD degreed as a neuroscientist.
Yeah. He considers himself to be a philosopher.
A philosopher, yeah.
First and foremost, yeah.
Right.
But he does have a good amount of formal training with that one famous Soak Chen guy, Tulip Rinpoche, whatever the one everybody knows, rainbow painting book, I think.
Okay. Yeah. So he's got some Rinpoche chops.
Yeah.
Right. Sure, he's a poser.
Oh, shit. Okay. Need any help?
It'll dry.
What a disaster.
You see, even the craving for satiation, the craving for peace, the craving for non-existence, which the Buddha eloquently warned about, is the resurgence of consciousness riding shotgun getting all up in your grill.
What was the Buddha's warning about that?
The what?
What was the Buddha's warning about that?
Oh. Well, the craving for non-existence. Yeah.
But his warning about that was...
Well... was like his warning about everything.
Yeah. Oh, I just meant like that was another piece of the same thing.
It was a subtle one. Yeah. Because the trained contemplator, seeing through the gossamer patina of consciousness itself, can get a little weary, a little, out of sorts. And crave cessation. Yeah. Right. As the end of, right? The end of phenomenon. Yeah. At the end of existence, craving the end of existence.
I remember you saying about a friend expressing just, not really wanting to live anymore. Not that there was a suicidal impulse or anything, but just tired of this living.
Sure. Yeah. Isn't it interesting how the what we're relying upon, you know, to get us through the next day, this kind of, you know, basic interest, affection, or lust for living, mm-hmm. right? In some cases, just empties out. Someone pulled the drain on the pool, and it just empties out. And, oh, boy. It's not necessarily, you know, a liberated condition so you can start your YouTube channel.
That's what we were hoping
for. I can relate to this.
You can relate to this. Yeah, but there's a certain kind of exhaustion.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whee! You know, TM and other movements promise you a thing, you know, by practicing your mantra and doing floating practices based on, you know, Patanjali yoga aphorisms. You know, you lower your blood pressure and your cravings for sweets. You know, you might start becoming a little, you know, psychic. And you won't need to sleep as much. Your retention and learning capacities will improve. Your blood pressure, on and on and on and on. But you could say the ruination is quite the opposite of all that.
You stop sleeping.
The ruination is the opposite of all that.
Disruptive. Seriously disruptive.
Yeah.
And mostly you don't have an interest in that. Or, like, it's not that you don't have an interest in it, you just realize that there's it's another merry-go-round.
Where there's interest, you pursue interest. As the interest wanes, you will go looking for other interests.
Since I have ADD, then.
Yeah, that's to your advantage. I mean, you know, how could you possibly engineer your own the cessation of interest?
Well,
because lifting a finger about yourself or your imagined condition is the movement of interest. So a certain kind of, let's call it sacred exhaustion, occurs. Which doesn't necessarily have to be as pleasant as the TM people promise you that it will be or should be. I mean, but, you know, same with Werner Erhard promising whatever was promised by being, you know, excruciatingly honest about shit.
And what did that get him?
Well, you know, he had to leave the country because he pissed off the Scientologists. That's where it got him, you know. You know. Tulkus and Rinpoches, lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. There is no secret teaching. There's just this, you know, deal with it, or get over it if you're in that mood, or whatever if you're in that mood. A certain sacred exhaustion hunts you down.
Call me.
Patiently, without fatigue, run as you might, hither and thither. And then when you're lying, you know, in a pool of your own sputum, with not a calorie to spare, if you're lucky, it'll cut your throat.
That's all you can do, right?
stitch that shit up real quick.
Yeah. So we negotiate with experience for as long as we negotiate with experience. Thinking that one thing is better than another or preferential to another is all myth. You know, living in a hut next to the Dalai Lama as contrasted with living in a cell next to Charles Manson. I mean, come on.
Did you ever see the person who put the video of Charles Manson's facial expressions up next to Donald Trump's?
No.
They're the same.
Psychopaths in a pod, man.
Two psychopaths in a pod.
Oh my God.
Well put. Yeah.
Part of this is due to a psychopath who likes Donald Trump.
Your hip pain, you mean?
You know what? I don't even care anymore. Donald Trump for president. Yay!
Ooh, she's going belly up.
I think it's time for you to start your own YouTube channel.
I know. I think this comes like it fell from the country.
Keep the knives away from her. It could be dangerous.
Kyle, after being a total jerk and like not helping me and leaving me to suffer in my own misery,
like a good son would.
He said, Mom, you know what? Really, in heart, I think you are a Republican.
Whoa. Oh!
Just stick the knife in and twist it.
Knife, twist, and salt.
Kick him out! Burn him! I don't know. I was like, fuck. Don't waste your time. Just shoot them.
You're an efficiency expert.
At one point, I wanted to be an efficiency expert. I thought, wow, it's just like a good way to do things, to make it very safe.
Yeah, and a legal carry permit. I'm going to whip this world into shape. So you have this, you know, dominant species at the top of the food chain that got there way too quickly without, you know, the benefit of an accompanying maturing process that keeps its eye on the Gaic field. And at the top of the food chain, it proliferates to 7.3 billion. Yeah.
Huh.
It's amazing. I mean, we're, you know, as a species, we're, well, any species is amazing. You know, if you watch a ladybug take flight in slow motion, you know, it'll put you into a reverie. Or if you watch a mosquito being born in slow motion, you know, put you into a reverie. you learn how to rest or find yourself fascinating, but not as content. Just the texture of being. So you resonate consciously with the texture of being, which sounds like anyone with a sense of humor could make really good fun of, because all of this is absurd gibberish. And yet you resonate with the texture of being, and you fall in love with it.
Song excerpts come to me, and like nothing compares. There's a little, mushy song. Nothing, nothing compares. I can't sing.
Is that Alanis Morissette?
Yeah, something like that. But it's like nothing.
No, no,
compares.
The Irish gal with the shaved head who pissed off the Pope.
Sinead,
nothing compares to you.
But nothing compares to, I know that feeling, like when you're kind of in the zone or whatever. Doesn't happen often, but I know that feeling. And it's like, it's nothing compares to it. You want to stay, you want to live there, kind of, but at the same time, I guess you feel like you don't want to get anything accomplished. How can you accomplish things and be in that state? You'd be like, we'll be thinking. I don't know.
It sure matters what people think.
No. It's kind of like, I don't know, if you're in the zone, you kind of feel like, that chick, the one that you're, Naya, what's her name? She has that, like, silly grin on her face. Jeannie gets that sometimes.
Oh, the
Actually,
old...
Sometimes you do.
Oh.
And it's like
you're counting me amongst the enlightened.
You look like you're completely stone, completely wrecked.
Well, I do that deliberately, so it appears as if I.
It's a good showman. Bring
yeah,
all the people.
It's just
winning.
Yeah.
No, it's not a win. I mean, maybe if they're doing that for winning.
No, those are sincerely realized persons. I was just speaking about myself.
You know what I mean, right?
Maybe. Sure. I have to say yes. I'm enlightened.
When you're in the zone, you have no care in the world about whether you're enlightened, not enlightened, happy, sad. It's just like you're.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, the stinging nature of consciousness is. Yeah, that can bring you right back. The stinging comparative nature of consciousness as you're forever unwelcome sidekick goes into abeyance.
I was learning a trick of like illusionist. I should become an illusionist.
You are an illusionist.
I am an illusionist to myself, but to other people.
You're fond of your illusion.
Okay, come look at my house. The illusion is beautiful.
You want to hypnotize someone into buying your house,
yeah,
making it appear as if it's freshly painted.
Keep it clean and organized.
There are workshops you can go to. Genong must have a workshop about that.
Just move out. When you
how to sell your house through Arcturian hypnosis. How to call on the White Brotherhood to attract an idiot to buy your house. You're not supposed to use the White Brotherhood for personal gain.
I think you get a little statue of, I forget what the saint is, but you bury him in the backyard. That'll get it to come.
Saint
somebody. You get a little statue and you bury him in the backyard.
Sweet. There's all kinds of ways.
Yeah.
Any questions?
And made abundantly clear, there's nothing in this for me. How can it be that it's still so interesting? Feels like the only game in town.
Well, sure, you know, we get tired of fiction and we crave something that, you know, smells like authenticity. But the authenticity is not, you know, doesn't have to do with moral fortitude or upright behavior or celebrity of any kind. Yeah. The authenticity is something very, you know, personal and intimate.
Something that's real. But the unreal just doesn't really satisfy.
Yeah, the unreal is that ship done sailed.
So expensive, though.
What's that?
You must trade the entire machine for something. Like,
expensive meaning the price of seeing reality?
Yeah, it's like all of yourself.
Yeah.
This. It's like a little slop-a-rooney.
Yeah. And the self doesn't go down easy.
Here's an envelope. Well, thank you all for sharing your Thursday evening.
We'll see these snacks again.
It's my birthday today.
Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Ryan.
Goodbye at home. Thank you for watching. There is one viewer.
Today is what?
Hello, viewer.
25th.